Hello everyone, I'm Suruchi and we're going to be talking about team building, collaboration and communication as part of managing project team and resources. I can't stress the importance of team building and collaboration because typically when a team comes together for a project management, they are unfamiliar with each other, there's no level of trust, there is no collective responsibility that everyone seems to be taking, and it is imperative that they feel like they feel like one common unit with a common goal and a common interest for any project to be successful. And it, with the right attitude, a bunch of unfamiliar people can be made to feel like this. So there is nothing like, if these people have never met, they are coming together for the first time, they're never going to like each other, they're never going to work with each other seamlessly. They very well can. They can be groomed in that direction and pushed in that direction, and it's the responsibility of the project manager to act as the facilitator and the catalyst to take them towards this right attitude. And there will be times when there will be difficulties and stressful situations, and team spirit and enthusiasm can be brought in and everyone can be made to buy in to this common goal. And this is something which can be developed through various trainings, through various team building activities, through the right direction and coaching and mentoring and conflict resolution by the project manager as well. So in fact, business psychologists present many theories concerning the way in which people interact, and project managers need to almost be amateur psychologists to human behavior. It's very important to keep this in mind, because as a project manager, you're not just dealing with the data, facts, figures, technicality, numbers, time. You have to keep in mind you're dealing with complex human emotions, interpersonal ego issues, various other barriers, cultural differences, etc. And you have to be sensitive to this and make sure that all of these differences work together properly and smoothly. And some of the factors leading to a good team are a common belief in terms of the common goal or objective, and that if this goal is achieved, all of us stand to benefit. And also recognition and the value of individual team members' role and contribution. There are 10 of us who are part of a team. Each one has our strengths, and each of us are bringing something unique and something of strength to this team. And a desire to work collaboratively, where people are sharing thoughts, sharing ideas, sharing concerns, and even from mistakes and failures, people are learning and growing constantly. A friendly environment where people work together well will also lead to lower stress, will lead to a lesser number of people who quit and leave either the team or the organization, which involves a cost for everyone. So a friendly working environment or a healthy working environment can definitely lift that. For example, there is a large IT and media firm who has a very nice team environment where they have lots of candies and various other things kept around, and very lively things kept around. Now, this may just be an enthusiastic, it may be a small gesture, but it leads to a certain level of upliftment and goodness where people can sit and bond over these things, you know. Senior and experienced team members have a very important role to play in terms of being mentors and coaches and people who diffuse this conflict and who bring in this energy and this enthusiasm which the other team members can follow. And it is important that you make team members speak to each other, constantly communicate with each other, because they may be learning from each other. A lot of times misunderstandings and conflicts happen because of you did not tell me and how was I supposed to know, and you did not keep me updated and you did not respond to me. So if there is a respect for communication, then that is not going to happen. And also, every time there is a team member who outperforms, who does something laudable, celebrating that success and getting all the other team members to celebrate that success is a big part of team building and collaboration, because people learn to appreciate other people's strengths, may also look up to their peers as role models to learn from them. So it's important to get other people to be happy for other team members' achievements as well. And the project manager should build strong relationships with each team member. You cannot play favorites. I have a team of 10 people. I am myself a design consultant, an expert. So I have a team of 10 people in which there are 3 designers, and they are my favorites because they come from a line that I come from. And I have a bias towards them. You can't. do that, because that will be perceived by all the team members. It will be demotivating for people. Other people who have issues will not come up to you because they will say that you have a clear bias towards a few other people. So you have to have strong relationships with everyone, and there are various ways to make the team a collaborative, supportive and friendly unit versus being a unit which is constantly competing with each other and creating internal obstacles, while there are so many external obstacles also to deal with. So there are various styles of managing team. One of the traditional management style often recognized project managers who made a lot of noise, banged on the table, made snap judgments, were tough with people and generally cracked the whip. What we heard about traditional teachers and parenting, right? Crack the whip and, you know, spare the rod, spare the child, spare the rod and spare the team, spare the rod and, you know, spoil the team member. That is no longer the style which is being adopted today. This was a regime of terror, and it can only succeed for so long because human beings abhor terror. Human beings will try to walk away from it, and human beings at some point of time will start rebelling or quitting and going. So now we're in a day and age where there needs to be a lot more open door policy, a lot more approachability, and there is a sensible balance which needs to be achieved versus the traditional style. And this balance has to be between reward and punishment. It is generally seen that people respond better to being rewarded for good behavior rather than being punished for bad behavior. So if you really want to motivate a team member, it is better that you push him towards reward and pleasure of reward versus pushing him towards the fear of punishment and pain. Appreciation and need for appreciation will work better than the fear of pain. Also, you have to look at the opportunities versus the threats. You have to encourage and facilitate versus coerce. So as I keep using the term facilitator, where you're acting as a catalyst rather than cracking the whip on a team member. And teams are not always hierarchical. We've discussed team structures where everyone is of a similar seniority with similar kind of knowledge. So then obviously there are going to be even more ego clashes and various interpersonal dynamics, because everyone feels they know as much if not more than the other people. They may not even be a formal leader in place. So how do you manage teams in such a way? And with different within the team, different people may have a different alignment. Who do I get along better with? Who do I bond better with? Who do I have a better rapport with? But you have to create some sense of balance out here. And every time an issue needs to be resolved, someone needs to take the lead and believe their responsibility. And for each issue, there will be a subset of people to make useful contribution. And the best team culture is when all members recognize. So whenever there is an issue, there is obviously someone who has to take responsibility. There will be some people who will have the guts to stand up, get involved, say a piece. So the sooner all members start acting in this contributing manner and standing up and taking responsibility, the better for any team, so that this unspoken rule comes into place that everyone is taking collective responsibility for any issues which are there. Now, look at this. If you create some sort of structure at times where you have a team leader is an important contributor to the solution of the architecture team, so you have a contributor and a leader, we are just showing you a small example of various roles, various team members, and a tabulation of, are you acting as a contributor or a leader? Yes, the leader is the team head. There is someone taking prime responsibility, but by even being tagged as a contributor, you have a key role to play in the dynamics of this team, in the processing of this team. So let us be mindful of each individual team member also being a positive contributor working towards the building of a collaborative environment. And it is important that the team manager assign staff to various issues to reduce conflict. Now, if there is a huge capability mismatch, it is going to definitely lead to a conflict. Having said that, that doesn't mean that the junior most employee in a team will never get to lead, will always be a follower, always following orders, because then the junior most team member will get very demotivated and say, oh, so that means that unless I work for 10 years, I will never have any leadership experience or capability. That is not the case. So, for example, even a junior member like Juhi can have a leadership role. Let me show you the previous example again. Juhi, who is very junior, has a leadership role in organizing social events. So, she may not have the technical skills for architecture, application or infrastructure, but in organizing a team building social event, she can very well have a leadership role, whereas everyone else is contributing in that role. So, you are creating an environment where you are also showing the junior most person you have the capacity to contribute and lead in your own way to the team, to the success of the team. And other people also recognize this and give everyone respect. So it is important that the project manager assign responsibility in a way that everyone gets a chance to contribute and lead and not always be only a follower. That becomes very important to building a good, effective and successful team. And this is something which doesn't come by default. A planned approach is required. A planned strategy is required to achieve this. So, a project manager's natural personality may help build a team. However, a planned approach, which includes very important and key things like budget allocation, like team structure, become very important. So, in the previous example where I showed you in the team structure, it would have been part of a very well thought out decision that let me allow Juhi also to lead when it comes to organizing a social event. Then even someone who is a director with 20 years of experience is following Juhi's lead when it comes to that social event. So this is a well thought out strategy and team structure which has come into place. And what is the budget I am allocating to this activity? Likewise, reward mechanisms. Rewards in terms of monetary rewards, incentives, and even morale boosting. So, there may not be a monetary reward for Juhi for organizing that social event, but it may be by way of publicly lauding her, writing about her in the company newsletter, showcasing this event, which will also make her feel very, very important and like a leader. So, it is both monetary and non-monetary. And project managers have to rely heavily on their intuition and natural instinct. And planning along with instinct and sensitivity towards human complexity is what is going to really achieve success for you. So it is very important, again, as I keep stressing, communications. In the various levels of hierarchy also, everyone needs to keep communicating with everyone. A junior employee like Juhi will be able to showcase her ability to for leadership to everyone else if they know about Juhi, if she's constantly communicating with them, if she's sitting quietly in a corner, not communicating her work, not communicating her capability, she's not really going to be zoned in on and identified for this opportunity, which is actually giving her a huge chance to showcase her leadership in whatever small way. Communicating is very important, and planned activities like events and regular intervals like family day, like team bonding activity, like everyone going out for dinner together, having a lunch day, having a potluck where everyone is getting something or the other together. These little things help people to let their hair down, switch off from the immediate task at hand and start share each other's lives and personalities and experiences from which someone else may actually appreciate and recognize something a lot and warm up to someone versus having a very negative impression about someone, you know. And it is necessary for project sponsors to understand the importance of team building and to make sure that they support. So if I am a project manager and if I want to do a certain activity, it is important that the project sponsors understand it and I have their buy-in. So if I sanction an activity like an offsite for my team which costs 2 lakhs and then my sponsors say I never gave you the authority to spend this 2 lakhs, then it backfires, right? And you don't have the sponsors buy-in. Likewise, something like I say that on a Friday I would like to allow my team to work in Friday dressing, which is casual dressing or informal clothes, because I want to create an environment which is a little more friendly and a little less formal, at least on one day of the week. But I have my sponsors who say, I never gave you the authority to allow Friday dressing and it will not look fine if my, you know, international stakeholders turn up and if, you know, my bosses turn up. So it will not look okay. So who gave you the authority to do this? So then you have tried to do something positive, but it has backfired. So it is very important that you have the buy-in of your sponsors when it comes to any team building activities, budgets, changing, you know, being a little flexible with certain norms, etc. It's important that you have their buy-ins as well. So as we saw in the previous example, it is important that all key members in leadership roles make every employee or team member feel important. And as we saw, it is very, very possible to even make the junior most employee like Juhi feel important and valued. It's very important. And one should, a team manager should start planning on their effective team culture, not even at the time when the team is coming on board, but even before that in their planning and their strategy. And it is very important that they state the objectives of the project clearly, what the end result should look like, and the importance and its value to the organization. So it needs to be understood by every team member that what they're doing is actually contributing not just to that short-term project, but to the organization as a whole, which shows them an improved value. And collaborative approach is very important, and it is the project manager's responsibility to stress this collaborative spirit to everyone. And focus area should be specified, timing technology should be specified, all the ground rules should be laid down. An example of other project specific things about which the team would need are the responsibility of a team manager as listed below, who they have to report to. We discussed how conflict can arise if there is confusion about reporting structures. There are various team structures, diagrams, hierarchies, flowcharts which can be used to define reporting structures. What are the tasks and how they have to perform? Where will they find the information, documentation, advice, etc. for any of these things? So what will enable me to carry out my task properly? How do we fill in the timesheets, frequency with which these formats have to be given? So if I have a 6-month project and I want that on a Monday morning, I should receive an Excel worksheet filled in a standardized format by every team member, filled in on a centralized software, internal software of the team and the organization, then it is essential that I lay this out and specify that Monday morning, the team manager is going to be doing a check of this update, and maybe every team member should have access to this blog, to this update, so that everyone can see the stages of progress of the various things. And this needs to be, this frequency needs to be, and format needs to be specified. How do you report issues, problems? What is the way in which things have to be escalated? What behavioral norms are expected? Clothing, language, timekeeping, personal use of telephone, internet, other requirements, technology. I remember there was a time where there was this software development program happening, and one day the human resource department sent out a horrible mail to all the team members saying, this is the list below, how much time team members have been spending on sites not related to work, like sports sites or Bollywood related sites. Now that's, instead of doing that, instead of later on pulling up people and, you know, warning them and creating a fear in them, it would have been better if the human resource department had laid out in advance and the project manager had laid out in advance how much time can be spent away from regular sites or what sites should not get access to. Maybe those sites should have been blocked entirely. So that would make it easier rather than let people overstep the norms and then, you know, we'll take them to task. And it is important to specify how people use specific software, hardware and other equipment, and details like where do they work, where do they like to work, their car, where do they get their coffee, and where to go to if there is a fire. So you have specified canteen areas. There are certain offices which have a clear rule that you cannot eat at your desk because of hygiene reasons. Then it is important that you uniformly apply that, and it is stated rather than walking up to someone who's eating and saying, hey, you're breaking the rule and you're not doing the right thing. So there was an organization where there was no eating policy at the desk, and right down, CEO down, it was specified and laid out and followed right from day one. And as a manager, you need to give careful thought to the desired culture, norms of the organization, and background of all the team members. avoid activities that only appeal to a few people, like wine tasting, kart racing. Now, if you have teetotalers and vegetarians, they may not want to go for a wine tasting with cheese and non-veg and, tikkas and all those things. So, you have to pull in the entire group, not just a certain segment of the group. Likewise, if you have an older conservative group, they may want to go for classical music programs more as a team together rather than going for drinking and, you know, wine tasting kind of events. So you have to keep various demographics, various other factors in mind as well. Try to avoid developing team culture where you only socialize with a certain group. So for example, if you come from a certain college, MBA college, and in your team you have two other team persons who are from your same college, it is natural for you to have some sort of extra bonding with them because they are the alumni of the same college as you. But you should avoid that, because then the other people will view that as you being biased towards these people and favoring these people, and it will make other people hesitant to approach you and feel a similar kind of bonding. So it's important that you do not form groups specifically and have an individual relationship with everyone and find interests where everyone kind of commonly affiliates to those interests. And here are some ideas for team building and social events. Provide food and refreshments for team meetings. It's particularly useful if people have to stay late. It's important if you incentivize them with a pizza or a McDonald's or whatever else. It does help people to stay on. People get hungry, they get cranky, they're already tired, they have home commitments, they're having to compromise those. So you can, in a cost-effective way, make things very useful. In-day tips, often most effectiveness is achieved, and serious business goals can be fun as well. And any activity that costs money or steps away from the norm, as I mentioned in the past, Friday dressing or an offsite costing money, should have the buy-in of the sponsor and should also be legally permissible. So you should not indulge in any team building activity which is actually crossing any cultural barrier or which is actually breaking any law. So even if you're going out drinking with the team, the entire team is drinking, please do not encourage your team members to drink and drive. That is, you know, against the law, and it is not worth it for the cost of team building. It is very important to communicate, because unless you do that, your team will not feel engaged, issues will not come up, people will not get a chance to showcase their personalities to other team members and get a chance for a different responsibility or higher responsibility. People will not learn to recognize each other's achievements, laud each other's achievements. So it's very important to keep communicating. When you are having team building events, it is an ongoing thing. It is not that you have a team and in the first 1 week you have one event and then for the next 6 months or 1 year you completely forget about all team building. Team building is an ongoing effort. You must keep spicing it up once a quarter, once in 6 months, maybe 6 months is too long, once a quarter, once in 4 months, where something small and cost effective is coming into play. And team building is not just a matter of organizing entertainment for the team, but also gives a project, typically gives rise to many opportunities for human interactions and meetings and informal discussions. So for instance, if there is an employee who, there is friction between two team members, and they spend time in a team building activity which is not exactly work related, which is a little away from the regular work, then you, by creating this informal non-work related team building activity, are maybe giving these two team members the chance to understand why the other person's personality is a certain type. So if person A, team member A, finds team member B very rigid and formal and conservative, and feels that he doesn't bond well, maybe spending time he may realize that he's a struggler who's a self-made man who has come from a very humble background, who has risen in life, and may actually learn to respect this person and realize that this person did not have the opportunity to become such a fun-loving person because he was trying to establish himself, and learn from his story that he has come from the rags and created an identity for himself. So he may learn to respect him and appreciate him more rather than just feeling, oh, he's so rigid and he's always, he's letting his hair down and having fun. So people get a chance to get to know each other beyond the work setup. management by walking around is a very famous theory, which goes against the traditional theory of cracking the whip, of asking for constant feedback, of standing on people's head. It is more of an open door policy of walking around your team members, patting them on the back, see what they are doing, does anyone need any help? That kind of culture, which makes it very easy and fun-loving, and also makes you a lot more approachable and creates a far stronger bonding. So again, management by walking around practices. Managers spend a significant amount of time making informal visits to work areas and listening to the employees, because a lot of times listening informally, you catch on to more issues and more important things than when you formally make them sit down and talk about it, because then their guard is down. So informally, you may actually get a lot more genuine information about your team. And also, managers must reserve time for direct interaction with the team, because you need to one-on-one get to know more about them. Whenever they have an issue, or as frequently as you can, you should give them time and you should give them an audience. Over the lifestyle cycle of a project, you will have innumerous number of meetings. So now we'll be getting into the kind of communications and the kind of practices that most effective meetings can have. Coming to a very important aspect of team building is your meetings. Now, we have spoken about physical meetings, on-location meetings, virtual meetings. So, meetings is a very, very important part of communicating, and there has to be a meeting schedule. They happen at different frequencies, but very often a balance is not struck. Most of the times you hear about either too many meetings happening or too few meetings happening. So a right kind of balance has to be struck over the lifetime of a project life cycle in terms of what is the optimum number and frequency and nature of meetings that should happen. So very often senior management react later on to meetings. You need to distinguish between formal meetings and informal work gatherings, and these need to be spread out effectively and productively, so that you're not taking away time from a regular work day and not really achieving anything. You should have regular meetings, communicate knowledge, and especially when there are mistakes being made, because mistakes are not just embarrassment issues, mistakes are something from which one can learn too. And sometimes people just feel that meetings are a reason for disturbance. You need to make meetings very effective so that there is a specific purpose. And from that purpose, people are actually being able to see the value of a meeting and the value of communicating across your teams. And you should have these meetings when presence of specific attendees, and doesn't mean that you always have to have 100% of the team members in any meeting. You can have the specific team members who are key to a meeting who can be there. So you don't have to pull out 100% of the team members from any from their regular work. You can have the specific certain attendees who are required. You have to use your discretion in terms of how that happens. And you may make more progress with small number of right attendees rather than the whole team sitting out there and resources and money being wasted. So there are various kinds of meeting. Of course, the traditional type of meeting is everyone coming into a meeting room, sitting at the same place and having a conversation, versus you can have video conferencing, which is very, very important. And useful for relationship building, for communication discussions when people are across countries or across different cities or states where it is not possible or cost effective to bring them together. And productive time is not lost if you have to travel, stay overnight, all of that. You will be taking away from your work time here. You have a 1 hour video conference, you just step away from your work day for an hour next, or you could even have this video conference sitting at your very desk, and should be it will be very productive and cost effective to actually do that, and also save a lot of work time. And it is in general a combination of physical and virtual meetings is the best compromise. Again, when it comes to teams across international locations and multiple countries, it may not be possible to strike a balance, in which case you have to make the most of virtual meetings and video conferencing. In video conferences, you can actually have presentations, you can share applications, text messages, diagrams, etc. There is so much of networking which can actually happen in these video conferencing, which are now of a very high tech nature. People can not just see one person, there can be communication, there can be multiple people signing in, logging in, communications and dialogue happening where everyone can see everyone else. So it is a very, very effective virtual recreation of a physical meeting. And other forms of non-verbal communications could be by way of emails, etc. And it is important because ideas are shared, people's thoughts, concerns, feelings are shared, which are all very, very a very important part of the interpersonal dynamics of any team. And very often, if this kind of communication is not happening, interpersonal dynamic issues and conflicts which are coming up will not be addressed, will not even be aware that they exist. So it's important that this continue to happen. Email is a very useful form. Now versus video conferencing, email is a little impersonal because you don't have a face and it is a reactionary thing. I send someone a mail, that person reads it and responds to it. Versus in a video conference or in a telephone conversation, there is a dialogue happening and a response happening straight away. Having said that, sometimes with time zone differences, etc., or when you need to formally record something, email may be a better way, but you have to keep in mind that not everyone reads all their emails. A lot of times people open their inbox and there are thousands of mails lying in their inbox. And if you want your email to be noticed and not get automatically deleted or junked or go to the spam folder, then you have to very specifically mention the reason for your email and the subject of your email in the subject line so that it catches the person's attention. And you should make your email very specific, concise, to the point and very effective and strong. Then you have your PC, web chats, etc., which are also, instant ways of interacting. Of course, you have to keep in mind that in some of these kind of forms of communications, you should, if you want to document the communication and have a thread of communication, then you should pick that kind of communication where your thread is being maintained so that later you can refer to it and later there is no doubt in terms of what was stated or what was discussed in this chat or in this thing. Now, PC web chats work best if team members have access to a directory of chat addresses for project participants. And sometimes you can copy and paste the text email documents also. Circulars are also a good way of maintaining information, especially when there is something legal, formal that needs to be recorded and a document needs to be maintained. Then circulars can be a one-stop shop for anyone to refer to when it pertains to processes, so that you don't have to constantly check back with the legal and process person. You straight away just refer to the circular and see what the circular in that certain aspect said. Newsletters are a very important way of spreading awareness, but keep in mind that sometimes a project newsletter could be a waste of resources also if it is not being actually seen by the other people in the organization beyond the team. And if it's a team of 20 people, then you have to also keep in mind the cost and the resources involved. You could have a project website where key developments of the project are being put up and the team members have and all the stakeholders have access to the project website, and it could have reference information that would be accessible through indices, and communication through this channel could be effective. And example timesheets are entered through the same portal. So when we were talking about, say, weekly Monday morning timesheets, which in a specified format which needed to be entered and a frequency at which they needed to be responded, they could very well be done through a project website or a portal as well. You could have other forms of documentation, which is physical documentation. Now, it is definitely creates in this day and age a problem of storage. But sometimes you need to have that. You need to have those circulars. You need to have documentation, which has to be stored in this way. And anyone can refer back to it at any point of time instead of having to turn back to a team member. And it is easy to control them. And this kind of documentation can also have a lot more detailed information than your text messaging or your emails can have. Circulars can definitely carry a lot more data and information than anyone else can. Other form of formalized communication could be specific processes in media, timesheets, progress reports, and you can check communication plans. Projects can have specific communication plans also. You have phase end and project end activities, which are very important when a project is winding up. Then celebrating the completion of a major phase of a project or celebrating the outcome of a project is very important and gives, again, enhances that sense of oneness, that sense of recognition and that sense of reward and lauding. And that is also very effective communication, which till the very last moment is adding to your team building activities. So it is the common goal and it helps to keep the team motivated and celebrates the team's achievements. Even if the achievement has not been 100%, there are learnings, there are various milestones which have been crossed. So phase end and project end activities also lead to a lot of team bonding and rapport which can happen. And this will understanding will help to motivate and focus the group, and it is an implicit promise that completion of the meeting and the project objectives will be celebrated. So you can have a phase end report also for this reason, and there could be a message from senior leadership, which is again a pat on the back, or you could also have interested third parties talk about it wherever possible, so which is also a pat on the back for the entire team members. And it is a form of communication which is sharing information, sharing awareness about what went on in this project, which you are making a centralized source of communication for everyone.